Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of September 10th. This is Tim Reedy, online editor. I'm joined this week by Jim Keane, a Jesuit member of the California province. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Tim. It's good to be here.
Now, Jim has just joined the staff here and was formerly a member of the staff of America back, when was it, 2005?
In 2004, when I was a novice for the California province, I did my long experiment of 6 months here from January to May of 2004.
2004, okay. And what is the long experiment?
Usually in the second year of the novitiate, a young guy is sent out for two experiments, one which is called the hospital experiment or the short experiment, which I did in an AIDS hospice in Pacifica run by the Missionaries of Charity, and then a long experiment, which is often more connected to the work that both the man himself and the society think he might be good at in the future. And so I had been a writer before I entered the Jesuits, and we thought this would be a good fit.
Writing nonfiction fiction?
I wrote a biography of Fritz B. Burns, who was kind of California's answer to William Levitt, built a lot of the suburbs around L.A., was a big L.A. philanthropist. That came out in 2001, a little less than a year before I entered.
You are now in your regency period in the Jesuits?
Yes, so that's the period in between one's studies of philosophy and theology, where usually a guy will work for a couple of years, often in one of our high schools or colleges, both to get some experience and also to prepare him a little more for ordination.
And you did your philosophy here in New York?
I studied up at Chiswick Hall in the Bronx, connected to Fordham University, and then I did a two-year MFA program in creative writing at Columbia University.
Now, that's unusual that you were able to do that.
Usually, if you have some experience in a field before you enter, the Jesuits will take it into account. So I had done an undergraduate degree in philosophy at Loyola Marymount University in L.A., and then had gone to a year of graduate school at the University of Pennsylvania. And that was enough to fulfill both the church's requirements and the society's.
Now, what was it like there at Columbia? Did you enjoy your time there?
I did. It was not what I expected, really. I had a great collection of teachers and colleagues. And actually, some of my own interests in terms of Catholic writing, Catholic fiction and biography, I was really able to delve into there because of some of my teachers.
Now, who were some of your teachers there?
Well, I didn't have them in class, but David Plant teaches there. I got to know him. Mary Gordon.
Of course.
I had an instructor on art of craft and fiction who spent a whole section of the course on the Catholic writers of the mid-20th century. So J.F. Powers, Evelyn Waugh.
Sure, yeah.
We went on and on for about 6 weeks. It was really a nice segment of the course.
Now, what will you be doing in addition to your work here at America? Do you have any other projects lined up?
I will be teaching a class up at Fordham University in the Bronx on American Catholic novels. Fordham has a special concentration in American Catholic studies. That's run by Father Mark Massa up there, and he was very interested. There's another course which is going to be taught this semester on American Catholic poetry, which is sort of connected to mine in their larger framework.
Interesting. Who are some of the writers you'll be covering?
We're going to start with some Walker Percy, Flannery O'Connor, J.F. Powers, Mary Gordon, Alice McDermott. And then I'm going to try and end with something that's a little more fun, A Canticle for Leibowitz by Walter Miller.
Oh, yeah. I read that in high school. That's a good one.
Yes. It's a big book. I remember I read it myself as a teenager, sort of apocalyptic Catholic fiction. But I think it'll be a good way to end the semester.
Now, we're going to talk a bit about what we have on the web this week at America Connects. This issue is religious education, and the lead story is by Father James DiGiacomo, who's a resident of the house, Deej, as he's known. His article is called Educating for Living Faith.
Yes.
And Deej has a long history. He taught at Regis High School for 30 or 40 years. This was a real and continues to be a passion of his, you know, how to reach out to the young. And this piece is about exactly what our goals should be in terms of religious education. In conjunction with that on the web, we have an article called Little Gray Cells that Father DiGiacomo wrote back in 2004, I think it was?
May of 2005, yes.
Okay, so you were on the staff when that was written.
I was still working here as an intern. I think other than Cubs baseball, Deej's biggest interest is really the practical application of church teachings and the intellectual life of the church into both students and parishioners. And so the article was a reflection on his years of experience with those two things and how they can be applied in a climate where you have a very educated laity that isn't necessarily always empowered in the way that it maybe we've envisioned over the past 40 years.
Right, and he uses this trope of the little gray cells, which are sort of the symbol for him of like the questioning nature that we all have. You know, like, you know, when you're told something by the church, still you have certain questions nagging at you, and you can't ignore them.
Yes, and the one of the metaphors he used is of the person coming up to him after church and saying, you know, Father, would you tell me about this? Or, Father, what about this? And how challenging that had been for him over the years is to be able to respond to those people with authenticity and also with charity.
Right, and we talk, actually, on the podcast, we'll have an interview with Father DiGiacomo to talk about some of these issues. Well, Jim King, we hope you can join us again to talk more about what you're up to, and you'll be here for a couple of years, so I'm sure we'll have plenty of opportunities.
Yes, I hope so.
Okay, thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Tim.
This is Tim Reedy here on the American Magazine podcast with Father James DiGiacomo. Hello, Father DiGiacomo.
Hi there, Tim.
Thanks for joining us. Father DiGiacomo is a resident here at America House and a former teacher at Regis High School, correct?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And how long did you teach there?
Well, there I taught for 26 years, and combined with three other Jesuit high schools, I spent 48 years teaching in high school.
Wow. And how long were you? You were at Regis, you taught religion and English as well?
When I was at Regis, we just stuck to religion.
Oh, to religion.
Before that, in other schools, I had tried Latin and Greek and English, but eventually religious education became my field.
Okay. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is an article in the September 10th issue, Educating for a Living Faith. One of the things you do here is you set up three different goals for religious educators, what you call the gold, silver, and bronze. Maybe you can go through each of those for us and just talk about what they would include.
Well, we're talking about religious education. The reason why I wrote the article is because there's been a great deal of anxiety, well-founded anxiety in the church over the feel we're losing our young people. I try to offer some practical advice to people who are trying to communicate our faith to our young people. Ideally, we would like to communicate our faith so that they become believing people with a good developing conscience, and they're engaged in the sacramental life of the church. I call that the gold medal. That's what we want. And I said, but you always got to go for the gold.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be sensible about it. What's the silver medal? Well, there are a fair number of kids who, they're attentive, they're open-minded, they listen, they pass your tests, but they're not really engaged yet in the life of the church. They're religiously literate in that sense, but they're not involved.
They may not go to Mass regularly.
That's right. They may not go to Mass, or really, they don't see themselves yet as active members of the church.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can accomplish that, where they understand what we're about, and you help them to take seriously the whole religious quest, that's pretty good. And then finally, there's what I call the bronze medal. There are a lot of students in our schools. They're not particularly religious. They have no intention of becoming involved in church life, but they are getting something from their religious education classes. They have a sense very often of social consciousness, social conscience, and social justice. They very often are generous in giving of themselves to others. They are well-versed in the shortcomings of the dominant culture. Whenever you do religious education today, if you want it to go anywhere, you have to juxtapose it with what I call the dominant culture.
Mm-hmm.
There is a real conflict there. And so these kids who get what I call the bronze medal, they come away aware of the shortcomings of a dominant culture. They themselves, on the level of values, have learned a lot and are putting it into their life. You could say they're secular people. They're on the way to becoming secular humanists.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad.
And in your experience, I mean, in your years of teaching at Regis, how are we doing? I mean, do you think that we're getting some to the gold, some to the silver? I mean, it's a mix, I guess, at any place.
Oh, it's clear. You get all three.
Yeah.
All three. And of course, some you don't even get a bronze medal.
Right.
I mean, that's bound to. See, all you can do with kids or with adults, you can only invite people. You can't force people into belief, into faith, into the practice of faith. You invite them.
And that's something else you address in the article is the question of, I mean, a lot of people today are putting emphasis on, say, the catechism, and just as long as you know exactly what the answer to these questions are on in the catechism, you know your faith. But you say the answers are not as important sometimes as the questions, and one of the goals of religious educators should be to invite the students to question. Maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, and the questions are not necessarily put in religious language. Now look, what is at the heart of adolescence? It's the search for identity. Teenagers, no matter how much noise they're making or how much they drink or anything, what they're really doing is they're asking questions like this. Who am I? What kind of person am I becoming? What kind of person do I want to be? What kind of world do I want to live in? What is real success in the deepest sense of the word? If their religious instruction or religious program doesn't connect with that search for identity, what you got is what I call just a head trip. You can teach them doctrines, and you know, if they're good students, they'll write them all down and they'll give them all back, but it doesn't touch them.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the piece, you also write about ways that Catholic high schools try, or grammar schools try, to enhance the Catholic dimension of their students' lives, one of which is retreats, which, as you say, has been a pretty popular and seems to be successful method for doing this.
Campus ministry.
Campus ministry.
Retreats, yeah. Liturgy, you have to have that.
Right.
Otherwise, the whole thing becomes intellectual, it can be informative, but religious literacy, you see, is not just a matter of the head, it's a matter of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
I can teach anybody the religion, but it may mean nothing to them if it doesn't reach their heart. We've always, any school has always had to have confessions available, they've always had mass, they've had celebrations, and they've always had school retreats. Now, they've evolved a great deal in the last 50 years, and to a great extent, they're much better than what we used to have. Some of people my age can remember when the high school retreat was pretty much of a guilt trip, and what really was leading up to the confession, get it cleaned up for God's sake, and come back later.
Right.
Well, we've gotten past that, and the good thing that's happened is a sense of community. Kids open up to one another, and these good retreats, and many of them are very good at this. They help kids to let down their defenses, open up, to risk being honest with one another. Very often kids come back from these retreats and it's a very warm kind of thing. They're enthusiastic, they've opened up to one another. I've seen it improve the social dimension in the school. I've seen that. But there are shortcomings sometimes.
Right,
not
what you
always.
Write about. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of them is, you see, in a retreat, if all you do is get close to one another, that's great. But is there any God talk?
Right.
Is there any God dimension? And Tim, I've seen some debates where they kind of lost God. It was a good experience they had. My only complaint is not what they did, but what they did not do.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a real skill. And when you get to things like liturgy and God talk and bringing the person of Jesus into discussions, then you have the dimension of the transcendent. When you're trying to pass on the faith, especially at the goal, at the gold medal level, especially, there has to be a community dimension. So that, for example, the kids can have a real good retreat, they really enjoy liturgy and everything. When they go back home, does their family respond to that? Can they connect with that at all?
You're making the argument for that religious education should promote critical intelligence and rational commitment. And you touch upon this a little bit in an article you wrote a couple of years ago for America called Little Gray Cells, which we're going to put up on the web when your article appears in the magazine. And that was an article that was very popular, got a lot of letters. People seemed very interested in it.
Mostly pro and some con.
Most con, yeah.
But it was quite a reaction.
Maybe you could just
give
a short summary of that article for us.
Well, basically it comes down to this. You see, I belong to a church where authority speaks with great assurance, and many Catholics say, well, now, a good Catholic is one who listens and agrees and obeys.
right?
Which I do most of the time, but then I have this problem, see? Like, I have these little gray cells, and they, like, when they say, well, you know, really, women in priesthood really wouldn't work. I mean, there's really nothing to talk about here, and there's no point, and that's been decided. But then my little gray cells start saying, yeah, but why? Why not? There are so many, for example, if you go back, all go back about 100 years when toward the end, in the middle of the 19th century, there was this big movement for democracy, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of conscience. And you know what the Pope said very clearly? That's madness. You can't have that, okay? And of course, there, most of the Catholics are, oh, yeah, right, we'll be careful. Yeah, we won't do that. There were some people who said, yeah, why not? Well, of course, they got in trouble. And you go back, you know, now 100 years later, and when some controversial decision is made with, you know, that it just doesn't convince a lot of people, then you, when I tell them my little gray cells are still bothering me, they say, well, listen, the Pope speaks for Jesus Christ, you know? If he says it, it must be true. I say, huh? Maybe. And most of the time, yeah. All of the time?
Yeah, maybe not.
You're going to have to deal with some stuff that my little gray cells keep bringing up.
Well, again, we'll have that article, Little Gray Cells, up on the internet for folks who want to take another look at it.
That's not the problem yet for teenagers.
Right. Yeah, they're not there yet.
No, they're not there. That's not their problem. That's going to come up later.
Right. But what you're really trying to do is develop those gray cells, get them interested in asking questions. And you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, by all means.
That's what education's about, right?
Sure.
Good. Well, Father James DiGiacomo, thanks so much for spending some time with us. And we'll hopefully have you on again.
Me too.
Okay, take care now.
See you, Tim.
We'd like to thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine Podcast. Tune in next week when we'll be talking to Father Jim Martin about his new book, A Jesuit Off Broadway. We'd also like to thank Father Jim DiGiacomo and Jim Keane for joining us this week, and to Bill McGarvey, who provided the music for this week's show. You can learn more about him at billmcgarvey.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.